Hi, I've been asked to talk briefly about my edited collection, my Victorian novel, Critical Essays in the Personal Voice. That subtitle signals the trouble I had defining this hybrid thing, a bridge between academic criticism and personal experience. I was getting burned out with all the moves of conventional argumentation. I wanted to write about reading, but in a different register. And I also wanted to bring the literature I read into closer relevance with my life. But it felt a little schizophrenic. I was the servant of two masters. In my introduction, all the justifications for the book are laid out in typical scholarly fashion in heavy armor. My essay on Wuthering Heights, on the other hand, is raw storytelling. I think it was hard for some of the contributors to find a balance, too. But I'm truly happy and very grateful to all of them for their willingness to contribute to this experiment in critical slash personal writing. In her 1987 essay, Me and My Shadow, Jane Tompkins, she wrote the foreword to the book. In Me and My Shadow, Jane Tompkins said, "The problem is that you can't talk about your private life in the course of doing your professional work." 35 years later, this prohibition still holds for the most part. Whether that is another form of patriarchal oppression, as Tompkins thought, or some sort of neoliberal surveillance, I am not the one to say. More subjective forms of criticism have always been around, running parallel to new critical objectivity, haunting the ivied walls of academic publishing. Eve Sedgwick argued that the problem wasn't that critics don't read from what she called the reparative position. We do. But we lack a critical vocabulary of reparative reading, and also models of critical reparative writing. Because we are all really well placed as professional rereaders to think about what certain works have been doing to us over the years, and to share those experiences in our writing. To share, as Sedgwick says, the many ways selves and communities succeed in extracting sustenance from the objects of a culture. So my Victorian novel has 15 essays by Victorianists at various places in their careers, and here is the smallest of nutshells of the book's contents. Andrea Keston Tang writes about reading Jane Eyre as a child and a teenager, and then re-examines her idolization of the heroine when she comes to teach the novel to undergraduates. Deborah Morse reflects on her 40-year relationship with Trollope's The Duke's Children, and especially her growing sympathy for Lady Glencora. The late Terence Riley describes how Conan Doyle's Sherlock Holmes stories modeled values and behaviors he could see nowhere when he was growing up in Flint, Michigan. So Young Park began rereading The Newcomes on the evening of September 11, 2001. She was a graduate student in New York City. Thackeray's 1,144-page tome took her to another world during that time of violence and uncertainty. Middlemarch is the touchstone for Beverly Park Rillett, and another Eliot novel, Daniel Deronda, represents the mystery at the center of all our reading experiences in an essay by Ellen Rosenman. Hardy's The Return of the Native was so deeply formative to Sarah Maltin, yet her identification with this story is so unsettling she hasn't been able to read it for 20 years. Jonathan Farina looks at how the language of exchange in Vanity Fair is linked to his own memories of growing up as a stockbroker's son in New York City. In Gaskell's North and South, the middle class and the working class are geographically divided. That uneasily reflects Mary Catherine Harrison's experience working in Detroit but living in Ann Arbor. In her essay on Bleak House, Catherine Robeson explores Dickens' depiction of erotic relations, framed around general questions about the way people read novels and the way they think about sex. And there are also some essays about teaching. Michael Flynn wonders why his first experience with David Copperfield in college is so different from that of his students, and he thinks it might have something to do with social media. Tom Yu observes how difficult it can be for undergraduates to figure out whose side they're on in Gissing's New Grub Street, successful Jasper Milvaine's or the writers who sacrificed their lives for their art. A particular novel can shape a career. Lillian Nader's unpaid labor as a graduate research assistant left her feeling exploited, but digging so deeply into the Pickwick Papers set the path for her career as a Dickens scholar. Noreen Hassan, a practicing instructor of yoga and meditation, and the only child of Pakistani diplomats, read Dracula as a child. It opened Victorian East-West relationships for her and inspired her research into Victorian medicine. I was also asked to discuss the book's connection with my future research. I really hope to see more journals welcoming a subjective approach to criticism and more publishers offering series devoted to personal responses to literature. For example, Oxford is launching a new series called My Reading this summer, and I've contributed a short book on Dickens. So since working on that book and my Victoria novel, I've become interested in the psychological importance of voice and maybe even the liabilities of code switching. I'm not sure where that will go, so I'm just going to end with this, returning back to that essay by Jane Tompkins. In Me and My Shadow, she wrote, "I find that when I try to write in my other voice, that is her private voice, I am immediately critical of it. It wobbles, vacillates back and forth, is neither this nor that. The voice in which I write about epistemology is familiar. I know how it ought to sound. This voice, though, I hardly know. I don't even know if it has anything to say. But if I never write in it, it never will. So I have to try."